Thanks for listening to Ace on the House on Podcast One.
Hey, man, hell of an episode planned for you guys today.
Well, it was hot construction talk, first off.
And some hot driving talk. First, ADT, this episode brought to you by ADT, the nation's number one smart home security provider. All the latest innovation in smart home security, plus 24/7 monitoring. A team of pros design and install a secure smart home just for you. And they have 18,000 employees with connected to the first responders monitor. So everyone's monitoring. Everyone's a pro. And they have smart home video doorbells. They have indoor and outdoor cameras. They have smart locks. Lights that can be controlled from the ADT app or your voice, professionally monitored carbon monoxide and smoke detectors as well. Safety on the go with the ADT Go app with an SOS button. So if there's a situation and there's a panic situation or there's an emergency situation, you hit the SOS button. So safety for you and your family at ADT.
This is Corolla Digital.
A master carpenter who's here to help you out. If you can't fix it, then let Ace show you how. Ace on the house.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The church better get on the mandate. You get it on, man.
You got to do those things called getting on.
You're welcome to the hottest show on the internet.
It's hot.
It's hot, man. And it's heating up.
Hey, wow.
And we're bringing the truth, man. We got a 50,000-watt flamethrower, man. And we're bringing it, right?
Yeah, we do, big dog.
What are you working on, Stromer?
Man, I just acquired the two vehicles for the Stromer home. We got the truck for me last week, and then we got the old Lexus hybrid for Mrs. Stromer.
Going in style, man.
You know, I'm on the highway, and I put it on the EV mode, and you're just going on battery only, baby, in traffic. I don't use no gas. Because the stupid truck, 14 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
That's a horseshit thing, isn't it?
And the way you drive it, dragging other cars and shopping carts and day laborers behind it, a wagon train. I mean, that's where that kind of friction's really going
to
slow it down.
To the gallon.
Seven with all the carts and day laborers you drag on the rear bumper. Yeah. Like airplanes. No, wait. Like Naked Gun. Sorry. All right, I want to thank BathFitter.com, ADT.com, and Geico.com for sponsoring this show. I had, here's my thing.
What?
My thing is I can't anticipate people's decisions. I can anticipate a decision like right or left, up or down. I can anticipate a 60-40 decision where it's like, I would do it this way, but I'm just going to make sure and tell them to do it that way or what have you. But I can't anticipate criminally insane decisions.
No.
And I'm basically just one of the people in the building on the one of the Twin Towers when the plane hits. You couldn't have anticipated this.
No. What do you do?
So I'm building out my theater.
Yeah.
I'm making serious progress in my home theater.
Yeah. It's it might be the only place you can go to escape them
soon.
Those people that live.
I got all the wall fabric up and stretched out and everything. And young Nick has been over there as an AV guy. He's been kicking butt.
What's he throwing in there for you?
Peter.
Can you speak to the way that you'll be projecting the way you can talk about car motors?
No, but I can tell you that I'm learning that you do about an inch worth. I think, Gary, there's some earlier pictures on my phone. Yeah, Gary's laughing because I told him I only needed the last three, which I do to make this point. But there's some earlier pictures in the phone that show the wall and stretching the fabric and things of that nature. I can't remember if I showed you or not. But it's basically you take these plastic runners. They're 1 inch deep, and you put them up all around.
Yeah.
And then you put all your speakers in the wall. Then you put your one inch insulation on the wall.
Right.
And then you stretch the fabric over the whole thing.
That's right.
So the wall just looks like a smooth fabric
wall. Looks like a fine theater, a boutique theater, if you will.
Yes. And Nick is an AV guy, and he's doing a great job.
Yeah.
Until yesterday.
Oh, boy.
So there's a little situation, which is, well, there's the baseboard's out. I'm not sure if I'm putting the baseboard back.
Did the baseboard overmount over the padding, or did it tuck to the padding?
We brought all the fabric down to the floor and try to figure out, like, I'm going to pick up the baseboard and I'm going to finish the baseboard. And long story short, I said to Nick yesterday when I was leaving, I said, I guess we got to just finish this baseboard in this small little area because the carpet guy's coming tomorrow. And we want to get the baseboard in before the carpet comes in. And sure enough, the carpet guy is there today. And in the garage, I pointed to what was a couple of lengths of baseboard.
Yeah.
That's also laying with some, like, doorstop strips.
Oh, no. I know what happened. One-inch baseboard.
You may know where this is going.
Yeah.
So I pointed at the pile of the 5-inch baseboard.
Uh-huh.
Now, Gary, you got to roll back to the first picture because I took a picture inside the garage. I pointed at the pile of inside the garage. Sorry, Gary. I pointed a picture. Picture inside the garage.
I'm sorry, Ace. I've never seen these pictures before of the garage. I don't know what's inside, what that looks like.
Okay. Well, it'll look like the inside of a garage is what it'll look like. You won't see carpet on the floor or anything like that. It'll be the first picture. It'll look like a pile of stuff inside a garage. I don't know. Maybe not look that garagey because it's got some nice cabinets in it. Maybe that's it.
Well, you do nice garages.
It'll look like stuff laying on the floor of a garage.
It's taking a second to transfer.
All right. Anyway, I pointed at the pile of a baseboard, which is all throughout the house.
Sure.
And in the hall and the rooms and everything.
There's
leading
piles
to
of
it.
Stuff everywhere.
No. What I'm saying is the baseboard is used all throughout.
I see.
The
so
house.
There's a place to reference the size of it.
The hall. You walk down. Weird. Sorry. We got to turn the picture over, Gary. But anyway, there's a pile of baseboard, which is laying with doorstop.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, we got the baseboard. Go ahead and put it up. And again, we don't need it, Gary. You can show the hallway or whatever the next picture. It's a pile of baseboard and a pile of doorstop. Now the baseboard is 5 inches wide, 1x5, and the doorstop is 3/8 thick, and it's about 1.25 inches wide. It's trim, and it's also probably rounded off on. Well, actually, it's flat on one side where the door goes. But anyway, I pointed at the pile and I went, "We got enough baseboard to take care of it. Go ahead and do it," And I'll show you the shot of the hallway, Gary. And the reason I'm saying that is because the entire place is nothing but 5-inch baseboard to get to the room everywhere in the house, the whole thing. And then I walked in last night and it was a bunch of doorstop. Now, thank God it wasn't nailed or glued down. It was all 45'd and put into place and
ready to go. He didn't
ready
nail
to go.
It.
Some of it he couldn't make the run, so he 45'd it and split it in the middle. And stuff. I don't know why all the pictures coming out sideways. I blame myself. Anyway,
what did you say? Let me ask you a question. So when you see the error of that, how long do you hold on to it in your body? Like, do you hang on to it for a long time?
If you look at the hall, you'll see that's the hall that just runs right into the movie theater.
That's right.
It's all 5-inch baseboard everywhere. So, of course, when I go through the baseboard and then I point at the baseboard that's laying on the ground, I don't think it's going to grab the trim wood next to it and do it out. I'm sorry. You can show the initial pile of stuff on the ground inside the theater, like the last picture or two, Gary. Sorry. So those were the little trim pieces that were an inch.
Right. That's very low.
Now, I
can't... And it's also below the paint line, which would lead you to believe, well, maybe this is the wrong
one. If you look around the rest of the room, you'll see there's other high. Anyway, here's what my point, fellas.
Yeah.
I can't anticipate this.
No.
This I can't anticipate.
No.
I can anticipate many things, but I can't anticipate this.
Yeah. Is this someone that's in the trades?
He does the theater. He's a smart guy. He's a hardworking guy, and he's a good guy.
Yeah.
But maybe he took some peyote or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, thank God it took a long time, and then we're just gonna throw it all away because it's not baseboard.
So what did you say?
But I'm curious. I'm asking you guys. It's true there was a pile of fine trim, and that was in the same pile as the baseboard that I pointed at and said, we got enough baseboard, and pointed at it. But why not go with what's everywhere else in the entire house? Doesn't that make sense?
You're talking to the guy who handed you a roll of Scotch tape when you asked for tape instead of a tape measure.
Oh, I asked for a tape. Yes, and I think he ordered me Scotch tape.
Yeah.
Also, Matt famously did not know what slicks on a car was.
He did?
And this is not his building incompetence, but I once said to him, go online and order me some cleanser. And he went, what are we cleansing? And I said, no, cleanser. And he's like, four? And I was like, just a can of cleanser. And he's like, for what? And I was like, I realized he didn't know what by the way, a life well led. I was very familiar with cleanser when I was 9 because, like, you get the cleanser out and clean that toilet. You know? Cleanser, quietly, one of the most satisfying products to use. You pull the lid, you pull the little sticky top off it.
You mean like the powder cleanser? Yeah.
You shake it out in the sink.
And then it changes color with a little water.
Some of them have activated cleaning crystals.
They do, just like Surt's had flavor crystals.
That's right. You dunk a little of that in the toilet, you get the brush going, it's a nice powdery slick on top. Oh, sawhorse? Matt really didn't know what a sawhorse was.
I learned a lot producing this show, really. I started it as a novice. Now I'm like almost a beginner.
Never heard of a sawhorse. See, here's the thing about something like sawhorse. Now, there's confer mat screws, and you never know what a confer mat screw is, but sawhorses were like part of like TV humor. You know, like the Three Stooges would go, get those sawhorses, numbnuts, and they'd turn around and clunk the other guy in the head with it, or they'd have the sawhorses set up, and he'd be standing on top of the planks, and then the paint can would land on his head. Like, I feel sawhorse is kind of like wheelbarrow.
That makes sense.
It's like, it's one of those things that's in, out in the lexicon. It's not super specific.
It's in the ethers of language.
There's probably been more sawhorses depicted in sitcoms and Laurel and Hardy movies than there have actually been sawhorses used.
And there's all, and saddles are put on those sometimes in the old stable world.
Saddle on the sawhorse.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Anyway, so I was devastated when
I got
home.
But look at Matt now.
Look at Matt now.
He has done things, and he's a beautiful man. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Stromer, what are you working on?
Well, I got the house going. It's one of those jobs where, you know, I do a little work, and then the guy goes, well, let's try this, let's do this. And now I've basically bid every possible thing you can do in the entire home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I've been on my computer doing a bid for 3 days on this thing. It's gone from, you know, a couple grand to like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of stuff.
And I don't know
if he's going to do it all, but I know that he's looking at the deli menu.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm putting sort of a general pricing on things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I'll say, pick the lox or the cream cheese. What do you want?
Right. Get it.
You know what I mean?
And that's the house off of
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. What year's the house?
I think it's probably something in the world of 40s.
Lath and plaster.
Lath and plaster, and then a lot. There's some really beautiful decorative trim that people in the past, she wants to strip all the wood in the front to give you sort of a natural wood on some of the trim.
Uh-huh.
However, at one time in the world, people sprayed stucco onto the eaves to match the stucco on the house. So to strip that would be virtually impossible.
It's nothing worse than bad choices. But they all happened in the 70s.
They sure did.
Yeah.
Because people got hold of the stucco gun and said, I'm just going to spray all this, color code it, and we'll charge for painting and stuccoing.
Mm.
Right?
All right. I need to get a multi-tool.
God, I want you to get one so much. Get the DeWalt. I like it.
You like the DeWalt?
Yeah.
I had a snobbery about DeWalt.
But they've really stepped their game up in some of this stuff.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going with the DeWalt multi-tool.
And it vibrates in such a way that it's not over. Because I've used several where it's so much vibration that it's difficult to hold for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But the DeWalt seems to take the shock of the vibration a little better.
Good.
Yeah.
How's your stereo cabinet splitter process going?
The what now?
The stereo cabinet splitter room.
Your home theater where there's what two else? Separate I don't screens.
Stromer, how many projects do you tell me about that?
That one? Oh, that's done. Beautiful. Oh, did you see that?
No.
Oh my God.
What else
look
would
at
I
this.
Be?
Look at this.
How's
thing?
The pergola you
have
built
you
in 1979
have
before
seen
I met
this
you?
Thing? I got to post this thing. You guys will be overwhelmed.
You've done a fence in Malibu. You're working on a house in Elysian Park.
Oh,
and then there's this
God.
Stereo thing. I don't
wait
know
till
what.
You see. Hold
I'm
on.
Sorry I didn't get the nomenclature right.
You've got to have some sort of what's it called when in school? When you have all the information on it. What is that called? Syllabus.
Syllabus.
Yes.
Yeah. What should we call that unit?
I want you to call that the bar.
The bar.
Yeah, I made a bar.
But doesn't it have stereo equipment in it?
It does. One of them does. But you're going to go.
I'd say the cabinet with the stereo equipment probably be enough,
I guess,
given our rich history of talking about this thing.
But you know how sometimes I don't listen.
Nah, that's true. All right. I think our... I think our internet is down,
what,
so I don't know.
Happened?
We can't. I don't know. I don't know how the internet works. I just know it's down. I know I've never lived in a home where I could talk on my phone inside of my home. And
look, here's one of my – look at that. Look at the paint job someone did on the job I'm working on.
Oh, he's
now.
Just pulling – literally pulling white paint off of a door that – looks like you did one of those facial masks, and the following morning you just peeled the whole thing off. This is full Mission Impossible
That's
style.
Exactly
like the paint, like whoever painted that should have their hands cut off.
The whole
off.
Room had to be peeled off, like you were doing a skin peel.
Right,
unbelievable.
Right? I mean, the paint behind it is pristine.
It's perfect.
It literally just pulled it all off in one piece.
God.
All right. We have a video of an email question. Let's do that.
Yeah, okay. We did it all before the internet went down because we're planners.
Oh, you're planners.
We're planners.
Planners.
Here's an email from Matthew. Doesn't even need a picture. That's how well planned we are.
Okay.
Ace, I've heard you mention using two knives for taping and floating. Can you describe your two knife technique and what is the easiest way to get rid of the donuts in the mud?
As previously stated, get yourself a trough. Put yourself your mud in there. Oftentimes, you can mix up your Smooth Set 2020, I think it is. Oh, we're looking at his bar. It's really spectacular.
Is that
looking.
Nice?
It's nice. You did a hell of a job.
Thanks, man.
Have a bucket of water. Take the bucket of water, 5-gallon bucket of water, fill it up. 2/3 of the way up, drop the knives in and rub the knives together, just cleaning them off like a sushi chef or something every 10 minutes. It just helps. It couldn't hurt. Take your mud that's in your pan and I like to drizzle a little water in there and kind of chop it up, stir it up, like get it flowing, get it a little smooth. Make sure it's not crusty. Secondly, get a, let's say like a 4-inch broad knife, could be 6-inch. Get a 4-inch broad knife and get like a 12-inch broad knife. Take the 4-inch broad knife, scoop it into the pan, the trough, pull out a blob with the 4-inch and scrape it into the middle of the 12-inch broad knife.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then take the 12-inch broad knife and drag it along the seam or that you're mudding. As you drag it along, the joint compound goes to the outer edges, like the wake of a boat.
Right.
Once you drag it along, you know, 4 feet, 5 feet, or whatever it is, now you turn it over, and it's all spread across the length, the 12-inch length. Then you take your 4-inch, you start at the bottom, and you drag it all the way the length of it, so you clean the 12-inch knife off and create a pile back onto the 4-inch. Then you take the 4-inch and slide it back and put the blob in the middle of the 12-inch, drag it, and repeat. It's just drag it, spread it out, take the 1-inch, pile it up, put the dab in the middle of it, drag it again. At some point...
That's actually very well explained.
Is it?
It really is. That's exactly what it is. You're right.
When you're... Yeah. At some point, the goo ball will get to the size of a golf ball, and now it's time to go in for another tennis ball size
yeah, right,
of it.
Right.
And or somewhere baseball size of it. Put it again, put it, slide it, get it to the middle, slide as you slide it, spreads out, drag it on the 4-inch, right back against us. Drag it up, drag it to the middle, drag it up, pop it to the middle.
Right. And then you can use that little knife to get sort of the excess trails on the very outside of the 12-inch, too, if you need to.
If you're getting the excess trails, a good point. If you're getting the excess trails, you're probably going too far.
Right.
You probably got too much material on there.
Yeah.
You want to have it hopefully get right about to the end and then pull it off right before it starts to leave the contrails on the outer edge of the 12-inch.
Right.
Right. Right. Okay. That probably that's means
exactly
you have too much.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
I can't comment. It's so perfectly explained.
We got a couple of good questions on there. First, I will hit Bath Fitter. Updating your bath? You should call Bath Fitter. Why not? For over 35 years, they've been instantly installing and expertly installing luxury tubs in as little as one day. No demo. Whoo! Can I tell you, man, bathroom demo is not like spare bedroom demo. Bathroom demo is a mess.
Little shards of sharp tile flying at you.
And all the mortar bed and everything.
Oh, man.
I mean, Jesus Christ. Anyway, no demo, no mess, no stress. And Bath Fitter comes out, makes you a new bath. It fits perfectly over the old one. Using the same premium materials as luxury hotels, one-piece seamless wall systems ensures a watertight fit, easy to clean, easy to care for, guarantee for as long as you own the home. Get started today. Just visit bathfitter.com. It's tearing your bathroom apart is so much heartache, so much easier just to go over it like a veneer. Bathfitter.com, and you can book your free in-home consolation. Over 2 million satisfied customers.
That's right.
All right. Let's see. Robert, line 3. Robert?
Get it on, Nate. How you doing?
Get it on, man.
Hey, I just wanted to say you had hit it right on the head the other day. I think it was just listened to the last one today about doing stuff for yourself and in doing construction, how you said you get so much satisfaction out of doing it. I've been working on my girlfriend's roof. I'm a tile contractor, so kind of don't like your last ad. I'm a tile contractor. I've been for going on 30 years now. My girlfriend needed a roof. She had a steel galvanized roof.
Yeah.
60 foot long. Each side of the house from the peak to the eave was 20 feet.
Uh-huh.
All the roof beams were 4 foot on center. So I had to put 2x6 beams in between each one of those so that I can put comp. And I'm just about done. And it's crazy the satisfaction that you get.
The rafters were 4 foot on center?
The rafter beams were 4 foot on center. Because it used to be an old chicken coop, and way back in the day, they converted it into a house, and they never did the roof.
Yeah, I feel you. So they didn't have plywood or anything like that.
No, it's had 1x4s that went long ways, and then the galvanized was nailed.
Don't answer, Robert. The 1x4 that goes long way, Stromer, what's that called?
Wait. The 1x4 that goes sideways?
Goes long ways.
You mean the fascia? The front?
No. Instead of plywood.
Blocking?
No. Instead of plywood on old roofs, when they didn't have OSB or plywood skinned up there.
Would that be called lath?
No. Shall I turn over all the cards?
Sure.
Raised sheathing.
Did not know that.
So these...
Hold on. When you see an old roof, like a house from the
20s,
and they tear all the shingles off, and you see those
slats.
See those stripes going across, like every 1x4, every 6 inches or something to nail the...
Yeah, that's raised sheathing?
Sheathing.
Wow,
raised
okay.
sheathing.
All right, good.
All right.
Theoretically to save money, or just it was easier to...
Well, how are you going to nail down your roofing shingles if you just have rafters every 2 feet?
I see. Okay, yeah.
And plywood hasn't been invented.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead, Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the crazy thing is that those 1x4s were every 8 feet.
Crazy. You want to know what? You want something that would surprise you?
Yeah, what?
When they demo out a roof that way... And then they skin it with plywood, you know, as per code now, put the new roof on.
Right.
They go over the top of the raised sheathing.
So they leave it.
They leave it.
I wonder why. More support, I would assume?
I think they're lazy or something. I'd rather remove it all and nail it straight to the rafters.
Huh.
Your plywood, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Robert? Oh, wait a
minute. Yeah, so...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it was like every 8 feet. Down the roof, there was a 1x4 that went the full length of the house.
All right. Now
so you just got the top, the middle, or every 4 feet, the top, the middle, and the bottom of the galvanized roofing, and there was no insulation up there at all.
Stromer's fading. What do we got? You got a question?
No, I was just praising you because it gives me that satisfaction you were talking about on ACS show, about the satisfaction of doing stuff for yourself and sweating and working and doing everything.
Listen, let me tell you, everybody. You sweat, you move, you work. You do everything, and everyone always talks about satisfaction. Satisfaction. You get the satisfaction. You have the satisfaction. Let me tell you something. Listen to me. Gary, Matt, are you listening to me? The satisfaction is a byproduct, but what you get is a fucking workout. It's like saying, Matt, Gary, you listen?
Yes, sir.
It's like saying you work out, and then you get the satisfaction of knowing you worked out. Well, that's true, but you get the workout. Your brain gets to work. It's not just the satisfaction. It's the actual workout part where you're constantly solving problems and fixing things.
And physically you're working out.
Yeah, physically you're moving, you're up, they're breathing, you're sweating. Like, that's all good,
right.
But the satisfaction is good, but the clarity... It helps you think clearly because you're constantly solving little problems, right?
Yeah.
And the number one thing for building is looking down the road, how is this going to affect this?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the schedule and how it impacts, right?
Do you want to put the carpet down first and then put the baseboard down, or wouldn't you rather have the baseboard down and then the carpet?
Even to your point before about talking about how the baseboard goes in step by step, most people might not know that. They would put the carpet down and then go over the carpet with the baseboard, which is the only way you learn that that sucks is when you try and demo it. And it's shoved and sandwiched underneath the baseboard.
It's just a simple, it sounds stupid, but what I'm saying is before you install the baseboard, paint the baseboard. Before you paint the baseboard, cut the baseboard to length, to all the shapes that you wanted, then lay it out, then paint it, because then you're not painting more material than you would need to paint. So you cut the baseboard, set the baseboard out, paint the baseboard, install the baseboard. Like, everything is an order. It's all an order. What comes first? And
there is a right order. Absolutely. That's what's cool about it.
Yes. And like, I'm doing a thing where I have this raised platform and I'm like building some stairs up to the raised platform and it's framed out and that's fine. But I don't want to go to the height of the raised platform because I'm going to have 1 1/8 subfloor on top right. of it. So I want to go 1 1/8 above it because when I put the subfloor in, I want it to be even. But I have to anticipate all right. this stuff.
And that's not easy unless you've done it a few times.
And that's the part where your brain gets activated.
That's right.
All right. Hit your Geico there.
Yeah, well, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off dry cleaning. Pick up some milk. How about Ed save hundreds of dollars on car insurance and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything? Just go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Now, they're coming to take my old wrecked Cabrio, paying me $5,000, the insurance company.
Wow.
Right? It's like a glorious bonus. That's extra money in your pocket. The most rewarding you can do today, geico.com.
So Stromer wrecks his own vehicles, yeah. and then he borrows other vehicles because he's wrecked his vehicle, and then in turn wrecks those vehicles.
That's right.
As well.
That's because I'm called Wrecker.
Whereas I just have a vehicle.
Yeah.
Matt, yeah. in all time you've known me.
Have you ever wrecked?
No.
So do you think that practicing through race car driving has helped you not get an accident?
Look.
Can you help me?
I don't like to talk about me. Matt, do you know my car's never made contact with another car?
Never.
Are you serious?
Do you think that's luck?
I've seen you pull up to this building and pull your car up to the wall and get within a 32nd of an inch, and I can't even believe it.
But how do you account for everyone else who's been in an accident? Because everyone's been in an accident.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, I've been in an accident. I was doing nothing. I was just driving down the middle lane of freeway, and this asshole rear-ended me, or this guy sideswiped me. Okay, how do you account for me never having that happen in 40 years of driving? How come it's never happened to me? How come it wasn't my fault? I haven't hit a kid on a Vespa. How do you account for me never being hit?
That's true. Yes.
And you're running left turn arrows, too.
I just did this morning. All right. How do you account for that? You could go, well, you're lucky. And it is true.
I disagree. I think that's skill and focus.
It's being aware of your environment. Yeah. When I see guys that don't know what they're doing out there, like, I get away from them. Uh-huh. Like, there's a preventative way. Look, when the traffic comes to a stop and some chick is just texting behind you and just literally never touches the brake and rear ends you, there's just nothing you can do about that.
Right.
That's basically like saying, I parked my car in front of the house, a thunderstorm hit, a tree landed on. That
happened to me 2 weeks ago.
But there are things you can do. Aha. You can play blackjack all you want. But there's a way to play blackjack. I played blackjack with my son the other day, and like I was dealing, and he had like 14, and I turned my card over, and it was a 3, and he was like, well, I only got 14. I was like, don't hit. And he's like, why? I only have 14. And I'm like, because I got a 3. And then I turned over a face card, and then I hit another face card and busted, and I said, see? That's how you play. That's how you play blackjack. But anyway, all right. It's not going to prevent you from losing. It's going to help your odds. There is a way to drive, not how Mike August drives, but there's a way to drive that can help your odds with stuff.
So what is that?
First things first.
Okay.
You must survey your environment. You must pick out. If you get some gardening truck behind you with 700 pounds worth of equipment on the back, that guy's leaf blower and all the stuff he's got on there, his stopping distance is screwed up. Plus, he's driving an 82 Toyota pickup truck. Like that one brake, if he hits those brakes hard, a puff of smoke's going to come out of one.
Right.
Size it up. You see a guy in a Porsche, you know, Cayenne or Porsche, whatever, or an Audi RS7 or something. It's like, that guy knows how to drive. That guy likes to drive. That guy's aware of his environment. That guy has, that car has a braking system in it that will prevent him from rear ending me. So if I'm driving and I got the one gardener truck behind me and the lane next to him is the guy in the Audi, I'll slide I'll just go in front of that. Because if the shit goes down, that guy's equipment is going to prevent him from rear-ending me.
Now, do you think it's your hypervigilance that you're a good driver? Because I absolutely don't have that.
I was driving.
I don't know if you noticed.
We were. No, that's why you get in accidents.
I know.
When we were driving home from Bakersfield at 4 in the morning once, coming over the grapevine on the 5, whatever, just pulled up next to this fully loaded, new-ish 7 Series BMW, and then Dumbo Mike was just driving right next to him the whole time. The guy had, like, tinted windows and everything. And I said, what's this guy doing out at 4 in the morning? Like, this, what's this guy in this $80,000 car doing out here? And I observed that while the car was an $80,000 flagship BMW and was new, like a year or two old, it was beat on. It was dirty, scratched up, meaning whoever's driving this car is not taking care of this car.
Right.
This is not a responsible person. Maybe they're a drug dealer or something. They have a super expensive car. It's 4 in the morning. They're not going to work at Caltech.
No.
It's Saturday night. It's 4 in the morning. I don't trust this guy.
Right.
And Mike was just like pacing him. Mike was just driving next to him. I was like, I don't know if this guy's got a gun, if this guy's high, this guy's whatever. And I said to Mike, get away from this car. Just get away from it. And Mike's like, okay. Mike just sped up. And he just sped up and took off. And 2 seconds later, you heard like a blowout. And so you see the car like swerving and stuff behind us, pulling over and everything.
Come on.
Swear to God, Max Pata was in the car.
Do you think you're psychic?
No, I observe things. I observe things. Why is this piece of shit car, which is an $80,000 car, but whoever owns it is not taking care of it? Why is it out at 4 in the morning in the middle of the barrio of Sun Valley or whatever? We're coming over the hill from Magic Mountain. Why are we in the shit neighborhood in the wee hours? And why is this car? Why does it have a limo tint on it? Who's driving this car? I don't trust this guy.
Now, conversely, I am in the car with looking at a phone.
I've done that with you on the road as well.
Reading a book.
I've seen you drive your car right? And I've yelled at Mike, get away. And he's like, but that's Stromer. I said, don't come near him.
Drinking a coffee. Used to smoke the cigarettes and drink the coffee, rolling a marijuana cigarette, mm-hmm. and shooting up my insulin.
Paul, 45, Minnesota.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, what's going on?
You pretty much answered my question already with your last caller, but I'm a lead guy at a cabinet shop, but it's a commercial shop, so most of the stuff is pretty much, you know, no-brainer stuff. But I run the custom department, mm-hmm. so like if there's a nurse's office or we do a lot of vet clinics and stuff like that, and I do a lot of the radio work and everything, and they send these young kids that work there back, and they just never had that. They don't seem to want to take pride in their work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard you on the ACS show talk to some of your employees about, you know, having a little pride in ownership. And I just, for me, it happened was when I first started, you know, 25 years ago, I worked for a really small shop and we went to a couple places and it would be an old farmhouse, an old lady that saved up her nickels and dimes for years to get a new kitchen. And they would start crying when they saw the finished project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And these kids are going to be able to experience that. So do you have any advice on how to make them understand how important it is to take pride in your work?
I don't think it's in the culture of 20-year-olds. I have a 21-year-old son, and you know he's not at all into the idea of even working with his hands. He feels like, you know, he's a camera guy and an editor and a director guy, but he doesn't work in that world of craftsmanship. And I know no one who's a white male in their 20s that does anything with construction, to be honest with you.
Right, but these guys do stuff with construction. They just don't care.
Right.
I think the problem is, and I don't know how you convert people, the good work and the pride and ownership and the satisfaction, all that stuff, that's all starts from the inside and goes out, right? So it's like, I want to do a good job. Like, I want to kick ass. Like, here's the thing. I don't want to be an arsonist, not because I don't want to go to jail. It's because I don't want to be an arsonist. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like saying, well, you could cheat on, what if I give you a magic wand and you could cheat on your wife and never be caught? Or you could embezzle money from your company and never be caught. You have a magic wand. You could do all these things. And my answer to that is, yes, but you would be an embezzler.
Right.
And then they go, but you would never get caught. And I go, I know, but you did get caught because you're an embezzler.
Right.
You have to live with being that person.
Right.
You're unfaithful to your wife. You cheat on your wife. You embezzle. You're an arsonist. You're whatever it is. You could never get caught. Stop making the external the motivating factor. Right. You are
but
the person.
But how do you teach somebody that's even important?
And so what happens is everyone wants praise, which is fine, but praise is external coming internal. It's like saying it's the opposite of prison. It's like, I want praise from the outside to come in. It's like saying, again, it's the opposite of saying, well, I don't want to embezzle because I don't want to go to prison. No, don't embezzle so you're not an embezzler because you got to live with yourself.
Right.
And I'm saying, do good work for you. If you get praise, and you probably will if you do enough good work, but even if you don't, you are the person who does good work.
Right.
That's the best internal position to be of all. Now, I don't know how you get people to internalize doing good.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
Good work.
Yeah.
I can tell you, Paul, that you can tell them that they will be happier. I was happier as a carpenter the day I decided, you know what? I'm going to start doing good work. Like, I'm going to stop.
Not the shortcuts.
The first half of my carpentry career,
yeah.
I was like, I got to get out of here. I want to be a comedian.
Right.
I don't even want to do this. Right. Meanwhile, I'm doing it all day, every day, thinking, I don't want to do this.
Right.
At a certain point, I gave up. And I just went, you know what? I'm doing this for a living right now. I don't know. I hope I'm not doing it for a living 20 years from now.
Right.
But right now, I'm doing it for a living, and I'm going to start doing it the best way I can. And then if I do transition into another field, I will take that mindset into the next field.
Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah.
yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to tell those guys is, you know, they're all, you know, there's actually the best workers I have are women. Young women, like 18, 19, 20 years old, they come there and work there in the summer because their uncle works there or their something like that. And they actually take pride in their work and they want to do a good job. And they're not planning on doing it for the future. One girl, she's going to school at a private school to be an occupational therapist.
And yeah.
She works there in the summertime and just does a fantastic job.
Well, thanks, Paul. Paul, I would just basically explain to them, they all want to be happy, but they think happy is more time off, more video games, and more catered lunches. Happy is more satisfaction, harder work, and better work. All right, Stromer, what do you got over there?
That's it for me.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Let's see. Last one, then we'll talk to Travis.
By the way, I got this guy working for me now. It's one of the brothers of a guy that works for me, and he just got out of prison, was in there for 12 years. And what I noticed about him is that he doesn't look at anyone in the eye because he was in jail. And if you do that, you incite violence, right? Mm-hmm. So he asked me, how can I be better at this and how can I be better with clients? And I said, start to practice looking at your coworkers in the eye, which is impossible for him because otherwise he shows up with his head down and, you know, pretending that he's not there. Right?
Funny, we had Brian Grazer in the studio last week and he wrote a whole book on body language and eye contact.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look him in the eye.
And so I said, yeah, learn to do that and then people will trust you and make you feel like you're a part of something that's special, right? So I just thought that was a nice thing to play off of the last call. Go ahead, please.
You're a hero.
Yeah.
Until he stabbed you with a keyhole saw this week.
A shank that he fashioned using my grinder.
Matt, you know what a keyhole saw looks like?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I do.
The scariest shank. If you had one keyhole saw, you'd rule the entire prison yard. People be brandishing their sharpened toothbrushes, and you'd be, get out of here, yeah, bitch. I got a keyhole saw.
Key, yeah.
Travis, 31.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I want to thank you guys. I love what you do. Ace Man, I've been listening to you since I was probably 11, 12 years old.
Uh-huh.
All right.
You're not happy with the stain on your floor?
It's, well, in a nutshell, we got hardwood floors. They've got, like, moisture stains and some, I think some kind of oil stains, uneven. I think somebody kind of just went over where some damaged parts were and trying to flip the house just stained.
Yeah.
Over parts where it was worn.
All right, you've heard me talk. You've heard me talk a million times about painting floors. Is that something that's on the table?
It could be.
Picture a really bitchin' beach house where they painted the hardwood floors and then put the clear over.
Right.
You know what I'm talking
Beautiful.
About?
Yeah, I do.
If you can't get all those pet stains out and all the water stains or oil stains or whatever, they're too deep to sand out or whatever, I would paint that goddamn floor. Just paint it. But the key to painting the floor is putting the clear over the paint.
And what product do you like when you do
just
that?
Just use the gym floor.
Yeah.
Like, people are always like, oh, how's it going to hold up? How's it going to hold up? How's it going to... Well, I don't know. You take a floor, a hardwood floor, you stain it, and then you put the gym floor. You put on three coats of Varathane.
Right.
Or, you know, semi-gloss or matte or whatever.
Basketball court.
Good matte. But you know what I'm saying? Over the top of it. And then no one ever goes, well, what about the stain? What about the... No, you put the fucking gym floor over the top of it. Okay. So paint it. Paint it whatever color you want. Do whatever border you want. Do whatever you want. And then put three coats of nice Varathane over the top.
There you go.
All right. Go to AdamCarolla.com and find out about all the live shows. We're going to be doing a live pod in Lexington, Kentucky.
Ooh, that's a nice place.
Comedy Off-Broadway. Doing a live pod there September 30th. So come on out. And we'll be at the West Palm Beach Improv doing a live pod as well October 3rd. And you can check out my stand-up at the Napa Theater, Uptown Theater in Napa, I should say, September 27th. And Salt Lake City, Wise Guys Comedy Club. That's the 25th and 26th. And go to Chassis and check out all that good stuff as well. We got my stand-up special. Where is that? You can get that on iTunes, I think, and Amazon, maybe. I don't know. To check out, not Taco Bell material. Stromer, you're going to be T-boning a... teenage intersection?
A good humor truck.
A good humor truck. Like they have good humor truck. They have custom
chocolate
vans
eclair.
From the
Remember
70s.
The chocolate eclair?
Yeah.
That was the one. Come on.
Don't get me started on ice cream trucks in L.A. You've never seen an ice cream truck in L.A. All right.
There was one. He had what's the Bible for the Middle Eastern folks again?
The
Quran. He had a Quran in the front of the ice cream truck in the kid neighborhood. It was always very scary, but exciting.
You can check out Expeditiously. Is that right? Expeditiously with T.I., a new podcast on Podcast One as well. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Eric Stromer. Same. Mahalo.
Subscribe on iTunes or visit aceontheroof.com. This is Carolla Digital.